Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Football fans, do you want to hear the whole unadulterated truth about where your team stands?
It's the most embarrassing film I have ever watched in my entire life.
Former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth gives his perspective on the top storylines and games on a weekly basis on the Stinkin' Truth Podcast.
You may get out of here with two sacks and a tackle for loss, but you're getting out with a bloody nose.
New episodes drop every Monday and Thursday.
It's going to be a street fight.
Make sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
It's time for you to plan your future. The exclusive sponsor of our show will help. That's the law firm, Kendorian Meron. They're going to help you update your last will and testament, set up a revocable trust for you and your family. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys today at kmlawyers.com. Tell them we sent you at Grant and Danny, and they will give you a great discount. That's kmlawyers.com. As we welcome you back on G&D, Toby Altizer in today. I'm Grant Paulson. It is time for your Beltway Blitz. We'll cover the NFL, the Commanders, the Capitals, all in one segment. We will start that in 1 second. But I do want to pass along some news out of Ashburn on this Friday, and that is the injury report just dropped. And so we can now officially, Toby, roll out Marshawn Lattimore, De'Ami Brown, Jordan McGee, Tyler Owens, and Andrew Wiley. Five different Commanders are out. John Allen is listed questionable. Presumably he will be able to play. Was full practice all week. They've got to add him back to the active roster and make a roster move. And Marcus Mariota, who has not been at the facility practicing because of personal things going on, listed as questionable, although Dan Quinn did say today that he will be ready to go, barring anything weird happening between now and Sunday. But five players listed out, Toby. Lattimore is the big deal in the secondary. De'Ami Brown's actually served a huge role now that they don't have Noah Brown. So you're now down two of your key wide receivers. Means a lot more Alameda Zacchaeus and more opportunity, presumably, for Luke McCaffrey. And then special teams taking big hits here with Jordan McGee and Tyler Owens. I don't know how big of a deal not having your right tackle Andrew Wiley is, because Cornelius Lucas has played very well when he's gotten opportunities. I don't know if that's a big drop-off or not, but it sounds like five different players being ruled out. It just doesn't give you a fuzzy, warm feeling going into your biggest game of the year.
Yeah, no big surprises here. De'Ami Brown, you know, the hamstring, he had to leave late in that ball game. No surprise that he wasn't able to get on the field. Marshawn Lattimore, same thing. You kind of figured those guys were both going to be out with the hamstring issue. You don't love, though, that you got three guys dealing with hamstring issues, because you never know how long those things are going to linger, especially De'Ami, someone, you know, we talked about Lattimore earlier, but with De'Ami, he's someone that's kind of stepped up as the number two receiver. Not having him is going to be a big loss. And with Wiley, if they were going to still be trotting out Trent Scott as the right tackle, I'd be a little more worried. But with Cornelius Lucas kind of working as a swing tackle, once again, playing some right tackle, I'm all right with him missing a game. Hopefully he's good to go next week.
All right, let's get to the Beltway Blitz right now on G&D. We will stay with the Commanders and bring on our buddy Nick Ashew of the BetQL Network. So, Nick, you just heard it, man. We just had this come out a couple minutes before we got back on the air here in the break. De'Ami Brown, Marshawn Lattimore, among five ruled out for the Commanders going into a winning game against the Falcons. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, listen, well, Marshawn Lattimore's been out more than he's been in, so you kind of just, I guess, are used to that at this point here. But De'Ami Brown's a big loss. I mean, that 51-yard reception last week, you know, at times, like, there is some big play capability from him. I look, I think this game comes down to the run game, though, for both sides here. I think that's one of the biggest things with Washington not being able to get it going the last couple of weeks, 2.6 yards per carry. And Atlanta's really good. Like, Atlanta's run defense is pretty good. And they're a top 10 team in yards allowed per carry. So, like, it's a bad matchup from that sense. And you go on the other side of things. And Bijan, like, all the talk about Saquon Barkley and maybe Jahmyr Gibbs and what's going on in the backfield with the Lions, Bijan Robinson's had an awesome season. And, like, I'm really concerned at what he can do against this Washington defense and that side of things. I think we see a heavy dose of Bijan Robinson there because, quite frankly, with Michael Penix Jr., rookie quarterback starting in this game, you want to take some of the pressure off of him. I know he threw the ball 27 times last week, but, like, right now, Bijan is – he's somebody that fits perfectly in this matchup where, if you look, he's got the third most yards in the league running outside the tackles. Well, Washington's allowed the second most yards per carry outside of the tackles. So it's like – it's little matchups like that on both sides of the run game that I think really make a big difference in this one. But obviously, look, we know that it still comes down to great quarterback play. And when you got the Jaden Daniels magic after again last week, you feel like anything's possible with them.
Nick, it looks like there could be some bad weather, at least rainy weather, at Northwest Stadium on Sunday. Who do you think that benefits most?
You know, I think it benefits a team that can run the football, right? It doesn't benefit Chris Russell. I know that. I'm sure he's going to be complaining. But besides that, I'm moving on from him. Yeah, look, if it gets sloppy, it comes down to who can overcome mistakes. And really, we saw last week with the Commanders, right? You're not going to win games every single week if you're turning the ball over five times. But what gave me confidence last week in this team is that they do overcome those, whether it's a mental mistake or just, hey, this is football and something weird happened, right? I mean, for the fact that Jaden Daniels could throw two picks and then the next time out throw a touchdown, lead the game-winning drive, all those things tells me that his mind says it's out, it's in the past, I'm moving forward. If something like that were to happen in a sloppy game on Sunday here, and let's say there's a fumble, I mean, Brian Robinson can't fumble the football like he did last week. Like, that's a major problem there. But if you have those situations where sloppy weather contributes to some sort of mistake, bobbled pass, turned interception, whatever the case is, this team has at least shown mentally they can overcome it, and actually on the field they can overcome that too.
Nick, I'm just fired up for the atmosphere. It's been such a long time since there was a game like this at home. I hearken back to 2012 against the Cowboys. I was still on the beat 12 years ago. They're trying to win a division against Dallas. Now you got a potential clincher under the lights. Speaking of the lights, the literal lights, I mean, they have the ability now with the LEDs. They've been saying all year and hinting that they can do light shows and turn them on and off at night. I think it's going to be really, really cool.
I'm so glad you brought up that 2012 game because I remember somebody, I was talking to somebody about this, I think it was like a week ago, and they were like, is this Eagles game, the one last week, the biggest game since when? And I said, probably since 2012, last game of the season against the Cowboys, RG3, Alfred Morris, 200 yards rushing, all those things. But like, now we're kind of in another one now where this is in prime time. This is even bigger in terms of where we are, and you talk about a clinching game and all those things. It's just such, like, I've felt like Ricky Bobby this whole year, where instead of, like, not knowing what to do with my hands, I don't know what to do with my emotions, where I'm just like, how do we handle a situation with a team that's overachieved, that's in these positions? And I think most people, look, we didn't expect this team to be this good. I think most people didn't expect that. Their win total was like 6.5 before the season. They've overachieved, and it's gotten to the point now where you look around and go, we got something really, really special with this group of guys. And it was supposed to be a rebuilding year. I haven't been this excited about a game I've been saying this the last few weeks because every game kind of feels like it builds up more and more. But, I mean, this is prime time, Jaden Daniels. It just feels like it could be one of those signature moments for him again.
First time ever in prime time in NFL history that two rookie starting quarterbacks from the first round are starting against each other. It feels like we know what we're going to get out of Jaden. What do you think we're going to see out of Michael Penix on Sunday?
Well, they probably are going to need him to have at least like one touchdown with his legs or his arm for them to win. I mean, it's great that you could win a game like that against the Giants last week, but I don't think that's going to fly against Washington this week. So, look, I do think they are going to still try to establish the run with Bijan Robinson and Tyler Algier first, get a lot of carries, and then put Michael Penix Jr. in some opportunities to succeed, get comfortable, get into a rhythm early. And, you know, listen, he's got a great deep ball, too. There's a chance you see a couple of deep opportunities maybe early just to see if they can, you know, go after it. We saw Philadelphia certainly doing that last week, and teams will try to exploit the secondary, especially with Marshawn Lattimore out. So I would expect kind of lulling the defense in a little bit and then throw a couple deep balls with Penix just to see what they can do. But I would expect them to be at least a little bit conservative. But clearly they have confidence in the guy, right? They would have stayed with the veteran and Kirk Cousins, which, by the way, not getting a Kirk Kirk Cousins revenge game. Really disappointing. I'm upset that we're not going to have that storyline in this game, but, you know, I guess it is what it is.
Yeah, that would have been cool for Kirk to be back with a second team. I mean, that would have been his third time playing Washington. Played him twice with the Vikings, obviously. Would have been his first time with Atlanta. Nick, thank you, buddy. Have a wonderful weekend. Enjoy the three games tomorrow and a full Sunday of NFL football.
Can't wait. Talk to you guys soon.
Be good. Speaking of three games tomorrow, we should preview those games coming a little bit later in the hour. All right, let's keep it moving. Talk NFL. Our guy Zach Kruger joins us now to do just that. Why don't we begin with the triple header on Saturday in the NFL? Chargers-Patriots, Broncos-Bengals, Cardinals-Rams. What's your favorite game of the three tomorrow, Zach?
Grant, Toby, what's going on? Happy to be back on with you after the holiday break. Of those three games, Grant, the one that I think I'm really most interested in is Bengals and Broncos. Obviously, there's playoff implications for both teams going on here. The Bengals are somehow still scratching for a playoff berth, but despite their horrible start to the season, things have kind of balanced out for them a little bit. And then they get a Broncos defense that has been stout for most of the season, but in two of their last three games have allowed over 30 points in those games. They allowed Jameis Winston to just torch them through there a few weeks ago. We saw Jerry Jeudy in that game have, like, you know, 250 yards against his former team. Just a lot of insane things happened in that game against the Broncos. And when you think back on that and how that might look, if it's a potent Bengals attack with Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, and T. Higgins, there's a big chance, I think, for this game to be a shootout, especially with the Broncos offense functioning just fine on the other side with Bo Nix and some members of that passing game, Courtland Sutton, certainly notwithstanding there. So I'm very interested to see how that game will unfold with the playoff implications and then also just the amount of points you could get from that. If fantasy is your thing and you're still in it in week 17, this could be a game that's ripe for fantasy scoring, I think.
A big game on Sunday for playoff seeding. The Commanders keeping an eye on it. Packers and Vikings at 4:25. How do you see that one playing out in Minnesota?
Well, I was just live streaming you guys earlier. I saw you guys mentioning the inactives for that game. Jair Alexander, obviously, a big one. It's going to be tough. Sam Darnold in his first game against the Packers this season, 275 yards, three touchdowns, and one interception. You know, I think that was kind of the game that back in week four really firmly put Darnold on the map as maybe a potential comeback player of the year with the way he's performed. Now people are talking MVP. You know, he's not going to win it, but he's playing at a high level. And it's a game that both teams certainly have to have, especially with the finale rolling in against the Lions next week for the Vikings. So exciting game. We'll see how it goes. I tend to lean Vikings in this one, I think, just with the weapons that they have. They're a mostly healthy team coming into it. Darnold, I just mentioned, he's clicking. Both Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison are kind of hitting at the right time. So I like the Vikings in this one, playing at home against the Packers and setting up for an exciting Week 18 matchup.
Another game, Washington would benefit from getting a kind result in is Eagles-Cowboys. They still have a slim chance in the NFC East if Philly were to lose out. But I will say, Cowboys, as well as they've played, so much of that is predicated on just force-feeding CeeDee Lamb, who's not going to be a part of their operation now over these final couple of weeks. Even if Jalen Hurts doesn't play, seems like a tall order for Dallas to beat Kenny Pickett-led Philly.
Yeah, well, I just saw an alert before I hopped on with you guys. Jalen Hurts, I believe, was officially ruled out. So it will be ticket season for the Eagles, which obviously bodes well, even for the Cowboys without Lamb. We'll get to that side in a second, but certainly Kenny Pickett's a massive downgrade for the entire Eagles offense. Just 143 passing yards last week against the Commanders, that one touchdown and one interception. We know that the Cowboys defense has obviously struggled this year, but this is Kenny Pickett, who we've seen throw, I think it's 14 career touchdown passes in 29 career games. I think the Eagles are going to key in heavily on the run to Saquon Barkley as much as they can. The Cowboys are very vulnerable there as well. And then you mentioned CeeDee Lamb being out. I went back and looked at the numbers. The next two receivers in line to potentially take work for Lamb are Jalen Tolbert and Kevontae Turpin, who this season have a combined 69 catches for 833 yards and eight touchdowns. The opportunity to funnel targets to Lamb, like you mentioned, Grant, is not going to be there with him rolled out for the season. We'll see if Jake Ferguson can maybe get a little bit more involved. But the Cowboys are, you know, they're officially limping towards the finish line with the record where it is and now Lamb rolled out. It's going to be a tough one maybe for Philly at times, but I think at the end of the day they pull it out, which will be good news for the Commanders, especially if Sunday night game goes how you guys are hoping for.
After the Christmas Day games, a big discussion has been the MVP race. Lamar having a heck of a day on Christmas Day. The Bills playing the Jets on Sunday. How do you see that stacking up right now?
As far as the MVP race goes, To me, what I think was so funny about race is I love the way that Allen has certainly had solid numbers, but he's also like the only quarterback in the league who can certainly brag about beating the Chiefs. And then I think it's a two-loss Lions team. Allen has some big wins on his resume that are, you know, going to set him apart in those regards. But Lamar Jackson, it's like every time people try to rule him out of the race, perhaps he sneaks back in. I think he you know, more than cemented himself back in that conversation as at least a very close second to Allen, if not the leader. If people in the league didn't get so bored with, I think, repeat success, you know, the Chiefs in their Super Bowls, Lamar with his MVPs, sometimes I think boredom plays a factor and people wanting to see that new guy reach a pinnacle that they've wanted to see him reach for years. I think Lamar Jackson should probably walk away with it if he closes out these next 2 weeks with solid numbers, similar to what he's put up these past few weeks. But Josh Allen's going to keep his name in the mix, especially with the Bills running pretty hot right now.
Zach, thanks, buddy. Good talking to you.
Well, thanks a lot, guys. Stay well. Have a good weekend.
Enjoy a great weekend of football. That is your Beltway Blitz on Grant and Danny. By the way, just to comment on what you just asked him about. If Josh Allen doesn't win the MVP this year, it's going to feel a little bit like, what the hell does this guy have to do to win the award?
Sure.
And I understand if you're saying that Lamar Jackson has had a more dynamic season. The way he plays is a little more electric than the way Josh Allen plays. He's a Ferrari. Allen's more of a like a Hummer or something like that. But we're talking about a quarterback who's a one-man wrecking crew for a 12-3 team who has a close to a 6-1 touchdown interception ratio this season, hasn't really turned the football over, and has, to Zach's point, with some of the quality of wins on that resume for Josh Allen, it's just, I kind of wonder, like, what's the guy got to do? Now, I'm not a huge believer in team record being the most important thing, or because it's not fair from a quarterback standpoint to hold that against him. I don't even know that you have to win the division, although the voters have made it pretty clear over the years that if you don't win the division, you can't win the MVP award. Lamar is going to, so is Allen, so it doesn't matter anymore. If you're curious, Allen is the betting favorite at every book still at a little better than like minus 200. Lamar Jackson's crept up close to even money, plus 150, plus 180 in places. I would vote for Josh Allen, partially because I feel like it's his time. But I say that, I can also acknowledge Lamar Jackson's a two-time MVP who's probably playing better this year than he played in either of those two MVP seasons.
Well, and the thing that makes no sense to me is last year you went with best player on best team, right? And that was Lamar Jackson. But if you look back at the stats last year, Josh Allen had the same sort of stats that everyone's arguing about Lamar Jackson having better stats than Josh Allen this year. So last year, Josh Allen had better stats than Lamar Jackson. Lamar Jackson wins it. This year, Lamar is winning, and everyone says that it has to be stats related when last year it wasn't. So I get that there's narrative involved in some of these things. Maybe there's some fatigue, but also if you watch the games, not taking anything away from Lamar, because you're right, like, a guy that's won multiple MVPs is maybe playing the best football of his career, and he's maybe not the front runner for MVP. But look at what they're asking Josh Allen to do and how much is on his plate. And I get that he's had maybe some dud performances, but the Ravens, like, if you're going off of that too, like, the Bills are the better football team than the Ravens, even though the Ravens looked like a juggernaut on Christmas Day. So to me, it still should be Josh Allen. It maybe is a little closer than we kind of talked about the last couple of weeks, but I think it still should be Josh Allen.
Yeah, and he's had one game that I can think of recently, which was the New England game where they played down. They still won handily. The game was closer in score than I think the actual game was. It was one of those where you never really felt like the Patriots were going to beat the Bills in that game. But in the recent games before that, they played the Rams in a shootout, and Allen ran for three touchdowns, threw three touchdowns, and threw for 350. Like, he had to be great, and he was. The week after that, at Detroit, how quickly we forget, that was the game of the year. That was the best team in the AFC, other than the Chiefs, and the best team in the NFC, two of the three best teams in football. Allen goes out and throws for 360 and two touchdowns, and he ran for 70 yards and two touchdowns. In those games, he has been magnificent. He has been, like, better than elite. He's been special. When they played the Kansas City Chiefs, he goes out and he runs for a touchdown. He throws for a touchdown. Wills them to a 30-21 victory. I just think in those huge games, like his Heisman moments, he's been at his best. And Lamar, statistically, has had a more prolific season. But to me, when I'm thinking MVP and value, it goes without saying, without Lamar, the Ravens are way worse off. But the Bills, I mean, we're talking about, like, Khalil Shakir and Curtis Samuel, of Curtis Samuel.
Even they traded for Amari Cooper, and it's not like he's been the Amari Cooper that we're used to seeing.
Coleman has played like five times, I think, and caught a ball or two in those games.
Look, you don't want to take anything away. Like, it might be that the Ravens are a better team on paper because they've got Derrick Henry, right? Like, how much does that impact things? I just think sometimes
they're better defensively. You just saw them shut out the Texans defensively. They gave one safety. Like, the Josh Allen doesn't have that luxury where you're going to go out.
I hate when we do this where the award is so much deeper than just looking at stats, but then people that want to argue this on Twitter and whatnot point only to stats. There are some other things factored in that, you know, really kind of just come down to a feeling when you're watching the game, but I feel like Josh Allen right now should still be the MVP.
I feel like it's Allen's year. But if it's Lamar, I'll understand.
Yeah, it's not taking anything away from Lamar. That's something that I can't stand that people do, too, where it's like, I think Josh Allen should win. Oh, so you hate Lamar? No! Like, I think both of them are playing at an MVP level. I just think that Josh Allen has been the MVP this season.
We're going scouting at 5 o'clock. We'll get the skinny on Atlanta and the change they made at quarterback and how much different they are now than they were maybe 8-10 weeks ago as a team as they barrel down the stretch now leading their division by a hair. But next, Marshawn Lattimore ruled out with four other Commanders. Let's dive into just how the injury report update changes this matchup. You're listening to Grant and Danny. Toby Altizer in today. I'm Grant Paulson. This is The Fan. Attaboy, Dad. That's how we do it.
I feel like this needs to be bumping at Northwest Stadium on Sunday.
Better be. Little party till we die. Nothing says Nats baseball.
Love it.
Like this little ditty here. Of course, an off-season of inactivity. In for Danny Ruye, Toby Altizer. I'm Grant Paulson. You are locked into The Fan. Top of the hour and a half hour at 5 o'clock. We will scout the Falcons. Mark Romani will join us. He covers the team for ESPN. You just heard the injury report and the update from Byron Kerr, but I want to go through the specifics of each of these announcements by the Commanders to get a little more detail on what things will look like. So we'll end with Lattimore because I think that's the biggest conversation.
Yeah, definitely.
I think Diami Brown's a sneaky big loss, though.
It is.
Diami had huge moments in that New Orleans game. People forget he almost put the game on ice with that deep shot to the 10-yard line when he went up the ladder, made a hell of a catch. But he has done good things pretty routinely, especially now post-Noah Brown. In the tunnel screen game, he had the deep shot from the goal line, if you remember, on what was nearly split in the field in half, a 51-yard catch, 4-for-56. So otherwise, it was not pretty. But 60 yards of offense ain't nothing, and a 51-yard grab changes the game a little bit when he made that catch. I think not having him is a sneaky, significant loss. When you already don't have Noah Brown, Zach Ertz has been banged up and hasn't quite played at the same level the last couple of weeks. It's just a matter of now healthy bodies. It's like Terry, and where is the production coming from? Zacchaeus and Crowder both caught a couple of touchdowns, so you'd start there in the receiver room. But Diami was playing an important role.
Yeah, I mean, specifically in what he brings to the offense, too, he's big enough to play outside. When you think about OZ and Jamison Crowder, they're more so the slot guys. And even though maybe he doesn't have the blazing speed on a gun, he's still the guy that's your deep field, down the field threat, right? Like, he catches the deep ball to get you out of being backed up there. And he's been big, like you said, on some of those tunnel screens. He kind of had stepped in. We had questions about who would step in as the number two when Noah Brown went down. It's kind of been Diami. So not having him out there, I mean, you just saw they signed Chris Moore to the practice squad, who'd been with the Arizona earlier this year, caught a couple of passes last year with Tennessee. Not like he's anything spectacular, but maybe
signed KJ Osborne. Everyone thought that was a big deal.
True.
When
do we see him?
This week.
It's got to be this week,
right? Diami out, I think it's now a lock.
But once again, he's another guy, too, that he's not a huge dude. He's typically more so an inside guy. I think he's bigger than Crowder and what you get in OZ. But they need someone to step up in that second receiver role. Diami had done some of that. I think it was still by a committee. But he was more so the guy that kind of fit outside. That not having him, I think, is going to be big. Because at some point, you're just running out of bodies.
I wouldn't be surprised if Crowder got 5 or 6 targets this past week. He's obviously been able to grow his rapport with Daniels pretty quickly. He caught 3 balls on 3 targets against the Saints in the first half. You're like, well, there's your Noah Brown replacement, I guess. Last week, it was only two catches. They were obviously both touchdowns, so it felt pretty big. But it wasn't like he had a big game. It wasn't like even Zacchaeus. Now, you remember 5 for 70 and 2 scores sounds like a hell of a day. I mean, that's winning you a fantasy playoff game if you scoop him off a waiver wire. 49 of it was just on a busted, terrible play by the Eagles, where they initially had 12 and then at one point 10 on the field as they're running guys on and off, and then they miss a couple tackles, which isn't to take anything away from him, but it was a bust. So now you're talking about 4 for 21 the rest of the game. And he does have another touchdown in there, obviously, but I guess my point is I didn't think he or Crowder had the kind of game where I go, well, damn, I mean, they don't need Noah Brown. They're set. You can't afford to keep losing guys at a thin receiver position.
The other guy that has some size that maybe fits outside, but he's more so a slot guy, is Luke McCaffrey. Like, get this guy involved more. I mean, it's surprising.
By the way, how good did he look on his one screen change?
That was awesome.
And he was a great kick returner.
And I'm not a Luke McCaffrey truther like a lot of fans are, but at some point, this guy's got to get on the field and make some sort of an impact, especially with more and more guys going down. So I'm intrigued if he gets more involved, like we talked about Osborne. I think it also shows you how important the tight ends are going to be, and specifically Zach Ertz. I mean, it's kind of surprising, Grant, when you look back to last week, Zach Ertz had one catch for 12 yards. And like we were talking about, he's throwing to OZ, he's throwing to Crowder, and maybe that final play could have gone to Ertz if he didn't go to Crowder in the back of the end zone. Ertz was kind of open in front as well, so maybe he could have gone there, but Ertz wasn't really involved either. So they've got to find ways to get some of those other guys involved as well.
Just thinking anecdotally about the game, he threw outside way more than inside, and I wonder if he got a little spooked by the overthrow interception. It was the McCaffrey. It was, by the way, wide open, but he missed him. And then he obviously late in the game roll into his right through middle of the field late again for another pick. Now that obviously didn't affect his psyche earlier in the game. That's not how it works, but he did have 2 interceptions in the middle of the field, but it was a lot more of like the receivers outside the numbers as you think about it. The deep shot to Terry's on the pylon. The 49-yarder to Zacchaeus is out near the sideline. There were a lot of throws like that. Screens, obviously, going out wide. But if you just look at the receiver room going into this game, you've got McLaurin, who's having a historical year organizationally. He's a touchdown away from breaking the record for a receiver for any pass catcher. Then you've got, with Brown out, it will be Zacchaeus, Crowder, McCaffrey as your 4. K.J. Osborne would obviously be active as a 5th, and I would bet they don't have a 6th up because McCaffrey at this point has proven he could be your kick returner. That's the whole room. So I think you will see Osborne active. I think you'll see him targeted. But this is if there's ever going to be a week where Luke McCaffrey gets involved, I think it should be this week. And he can't have done anything but help himself a week ago with one of the great kick returning weeks of their season and in the league this past week. And also, the one chance he got, as I mentioned, that 13-yard screen where he kind of read it out and followed his blocks and made a play after the catch. That's how you show them, okay, give me another chance. Like, give me another opportunity. So I would think with another injury, plus the week he's coming off of, maybe this is your 3 or 4 target Luke McCaffrey week finally.
Yeah, I mean, if they're going to want to throw more of those tunnel screens, he probably fits the bill the best, right? Of which receiver's going to run it outside of a Terry, which they haven't really run those with Terry. So if you're going to run it with someone else, it feels like your best option is going to be with McCaffrey. Real quick, though, if you're talking pass catchers overall, I think we saw last week with Ben Sinnott that it's tough for them to get him on the field when they ask him to run that like sift into a screen and he's got to go get that block on Slay and he just completely whiffs and he blows up the play. Because I think you could get him involved in the passing game, right, Grant? Like, this is a guy in the preseason that showed you just get him the ball 2 yards past the line. He can run and break some tackles.
It's one of the most surprising things about this season. They have no interest in involving him as a receiver.
But if they can't trust him blocking, then they're just not going to get him on the field. And so there's,
I think he's mostly been good as a blocker. That's what you're referencing is a really hard ask.
It is. But they've had some issues with it. I don't know quite understand what it is, but I would love to see, like, if you're worrying about who you're going to get the ball to in the passing game outside of Terry, and if Ertz isn't going to play a large role, then guys that can make stuff after the catch happen might need to be a bigger part of the game plan. And I think Sinnott is one of those guys that you're not going to ask him to do anything too much. You're not asking him to be Ertz and figure out the void in the zone 10 yards down the field. You're asking him to run a tight end drag, and Jaden hits him, and he turns a 2-yard catch into an 8-yard gain.
Yeah, if you could get Terry 10 to 12 targets and 7 or 8 catches for close to 100 yards, what you're talking about then is from the other 4 guys, you're looking for a combined, 12 catches and 75, you know, if it's 12, it'll be higher, obviously. You know, you're talking about 100, 120 at that point. But if it's 10 catches for 90 yards or something, it can work. Then you involve a couple of throws out of the backfield to Brian Robinson or Jeremy McNichols. You know, if Ertz goes 4 for 30, and you have a pretty good day throwing the football. But I think it's going to have to be Zaccheaus, Crowder, because even though for me, I'm desperate to see more, I guess I would technically be a Luke McCaffrey truther, it just has not happened.
Yeah, it just hasn't showed up much.
Wiley being out at right tackle, it sounds like we're in agreement. You'd rather him be healthy than not, but it's not a fall off to Cornelius Lucas.
I think if anything, what it is you just lose the security blanket, right? Because you feel good like you have three offensive tackles when Wiley's out there and Lucas is ready to go for either one.
Boom.
When you don't have Wiley, now you're suddenly like, if anything happens, you're screwed.
And we saw this past week, Coleman gets hurt and is slow to get up. Doesn't take much. You get rolled up on if you're Lucas. And then Trent Scott's coming into the game, and that's where you have a pretty Grand Canyon-sized gap.
Correct.
As we've seen. So, yeah, it's a just not having him means you're down to now. Those two guys need to stay on the field for you to feel okay. The three other players that are out are specialists, mostly, and McGee, and Tyler Owens, notably. But Marshawn Lattimore is the key here, and that's who we need to into next, because the corner they acquired will have now missed 6 of the 8 games since they traded for him. Who steps up at corner without him? Do you go back to Benjamin St. Juste? Would you roll with Michael Davis, who also got benched earlier this year and doesn't have as many pelts on the wall here as far as playing at a high level as St. Juste does? I mean, what would you guys do at corner without Lattimore? 800-636-1067 is the number on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Welcome back, Grant and Danny on The Fan. Danny's out today. Toby Altizer hanging out. We'll take you up to 6:30 and overtime tonight right here on The Fan. The Caps are back in action post-holiday break tomorrow in Toronto. Sounds like Alex Ovechkin will make his return to the ice. The Grade 8 begins his quest again to try to catch Wayne Gretzky. Nothing official, but all signs pointing toward Ovechkin playing tomorrow night against the Maple Leafs north of the border. Marshawn Lattimore will not be playing Sunday night as the Commanders try to clinch a playoff berth against the Falcons, a team he's played many, many times in NFC South matchups as a New Orleans Saint. This was Dan Quinn today at the press conference out in Ashburn discussing Lattimore.
With Lattimore, in terms of injury, is it just a reoccurrence of what he was already dealing with?
Yes.
Okay. As far as this game goes, if he's not available to go, obviously Benjamin St. Juste had been playing a lot previously. Would it be likely he would be the one out there, especially going up against a guy like Drake London?
It'll be a mix of people for sure. If we go that way, Mike Davis as well, you know, be somebody that would work into that spot or has been working into that spot this week. Both Ben and Mike took some reps into that spot.
Oof.
If we go that way, it's tough.
Well, I think if we go that way meant if Marshawn Lattimore's out, because he was still pretending
we knew he was.
Right. But he, at that point, I mean, he was asked earlier in the press conference, like, but you haven't ruled him out yet. And he said no, because he was doing the shtick like,
yes.
Yeah, me and Adam Peters got to go talk.
We got to have a meeting. Yeah. Well, we knew they were out.
Exactly. So when they ruled him out, it means they went that way. So now the question is, do you play BSJ or not? And his point was, multiple guys will play.
Maybe Michael Davis. Like, well, if you're going to go to Michael Davis, that does not speak well of Benjamin St. Juste.
Here's the only endorsement I will give for those two guys is I actually like the matchup a little bit of Drake London for both of them, and specifically for St. Juste.
I agree.
St. Juste is big and long and physical. Now, that gets him in trouble at times because he's handsy, and he's oftentimes on the guy he's supposed to, and he's close enough to interfere and get flags, but that isn't always a terrible sign. He loses technique and gets penalized, which stinks. But, I mean, Marshawn Lattimore got 3 PI flags thrown on him last week, too. It happens. The good corners, too. I don't like St. Juste on Darnell Mooney.
Correct.
I don't like St. Juste. He's not going to be in the slot, so it doesn't matter. But, like, I don't like him necessarily on Ray-Ray McCloud.
Mm-hmm.
Drake London is more SUV than he is coupe. He is more like 18-wheeler. It's the big physical, kind of that Larry Fitzgerald, like square in, box you out kind of receiver. I think St. Juste actually is a decent matchup because of how physical he is. And in fact, if you go back, I don't have the numbers in front of me anymore because, frankly, I didn't think we'd need to talk about Michael Davis anymore. But this offseason when they signed him, I looked up. There was a stat out there for like basically the corners that were viewed as the most physical, and it was based on like the next-gen chip data of like getting up on a receiver and contact during a play and all this stuff. And both him and St. Juste were like in the top seven among corners last year. And I think that's what they kind of like the idea of. So those dudes, those bigger, longer corners against Drake London, I actually don't hate. But for Quinn to come out and basically say, instead of just giving a vote of confidence to St. Juste, to say, yeah, we'll throw a few guys at that. That tells you everything you need to know about where they are on Benjamin St. Juste.
Yeah, to your point, the article you're talking about is the 10 most physical corners. PFF had this. Of just the amount of routes run that the corner made contact. Number one in the league was A.J. Terrell last year. Number two is Michael Davis at 38.2%. Benjamin St. Juste was at 32.9%, fifth in the league last year. So those guys playing physical, I mean, look, I don't know what we're going to see out of Benjamin St. Juste on Sunday, but if you were going to pick a receiver that you wanted BSJ to cover with the lack of confidence that seemingly gone around this organization with him, it's a guy like Drake London. Not saying that Drake London's not talented, but it's that style of receiver, like you're saying, where, you know, if you go back, it's more so the guy that's going to run in routes or a post route. It's right. Nothing like last year. I go back to this when people would talk about moving him to the slot. I think it's the stupidest thing some people have suggested, because go back and watch last year when he had to try to guard Zay Flowers in training camp. He runs a little.
Last year, Zay Flowers had 120 yards in the first half against him this year.
Yeah. So remember when he tried to run a little whip route and Benjamin St. Juste just disappears off the screen when it's just in practice on one-on-one. So to me, like, if you're trying to put him on those sorts of guys, it's never going to work. But if you're going to put him on a guy who's bigger, who's not as agile as someone that's lower to the ground, Julian Edelman style, but you're going to get him a bigger bodied receiver that's going to run those routes like that. And he's got speed. Like, the reason so many people are enamored with Benjamin St. Juste is he's got the look of an elite NFL corner. He just doesn't have the skill and stuff right now to match up with it. But if you're going to have an ideal matchup, it's a Drake London. So maybe this is an opportunity for him to go out there and play better than he has all season long and redeem himself a little bit, because he's going to be counted on a lot.
It would be if your coach comes out and says, yeah, BSJ is going to get Drake London and we're going to sink or swim with him doing that. But he didn't do that. He came out and he's like, you know who you got to think about is this Michael Davis
Michael
guy.
Davis. Well, and that's the thing. I mean, it's not a big endorsement of BSJ. And frankly, I mean, some of the stuff, too, is like last week, he gets an opportunity to come in when Lattimore's out. And it's it's a penalty. It's fourth and seven, right? And you've got to at least make a tackle.
Well, I thought you were talking about the Saints game. Remember, he played three snaps in the Saints game.
Saints game,
only
too.
Only one after halftime. His only snap of the second half on a third and long when they got a sack. Completely away from the play, irrelevant to the play. He could have just sat down at the snap and it would have been fine. And instead, he gets a penalty for an automatic first down.
Oh, and by the way, you know the receiver's name? You remember him? He's a star in the league. Kevin Austin?
Right.
Yeah, like, come on. Like, so that's the problem is...
And then this past week, which you were getting to before I cut you off to go to the Saints, was the A.J. Brown play.
Fourth and seven. It's a drag route. He catches about 3 yards short of the sticks, and he's unable to get a finger on A.J. Brown just to bring him down. So... that's the difficult part with St. Juste is, like, sometimes you've seen flashes. This year, I think some of that confidence has gone away and you haven't seen him be able to do it much recently.
But don't you agree with this? For a guy that's lost confidence and for a guy who is struggling, it is really, really hard to get right as a pinch hitter.
Like, 100%.
It is easier to get right when you're in a funk, when you get to play every day and have 30 at-bats in a
Absolutely.
Week or whatever. He is now, with zero confidence, like getting pinch hit opportunities in huge spots against dudes that are, like A.J. Brown, who's on a heater torching Marshawn Lattimore, and now you come out there on a fourth down where they're running an impossible play to cover anyway. Now, the only issue I had on that play was it was a terrible tackle attempt.
Yes.
You took a bad angle, you didn't get a hand
Correct.
On him, but like covering up a future Hall of Famer on a drag across the whole field.
I have no issue giving up the catch there. You've got to make the tackle, right? They throw a drag route on fourth and seven. You cannot let them pick up the first down.
To me, though, if you go to him yesterday and you go, dude, you get one more shot. Like, go be a baller. Changes how everyone views you. Changes how we feel about you. Go have a great game. But instead, they're going in with this, like, Michael Davis, Benjamin St. Juice, we'll see. Like, I just don't think it sets him up to play well.
It doesn't, but at the same point, like, part of the reason that I felt when Lattimore came back for the two games that he has, that I would have sent Benjamin St. Juice to the bench is I don't think he's a part of the future. Right. When you look at his contract, it's done after this year. I don't think he's a part of the future.
I agree, but neither is Michael Davis.
No, he's not. But I think they kind of have moved on. And now that you're stuck, you're like, best of two options. Well, you know, I think that it's going to end up being that Benjamin St. Juice plays a majority of the snaps because that's what's happened. But you're right. I mean, I'm also not going to spend all my time trying to develop him when he's probably getting moved on from. But now you're thrust into duty again.
There is something to be said for that. But this is also where you can't just coach that week. And you've got a guy with a hamstring problem that's been reoccurring all year long.
Sure.
Like, you can't just bury a guy and say, we'll never need him again at a thin position when you're one tweak away from him being a starter, like, which is where we are. Let's get the latest on the Falcons, though, and scout the opponent with Mark Grimondi of ESPN, who's going to join us next. We'll talk Jaden Daniels next hour. Need a gem from him to get into the playoffs this weekend. Will Washington get it? We're Grant and Danny. No Danny. Toby's in today on the Fan.